I'm Mike DeLu from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place for community members, friends, and scientists to share stories and place-based knowledge in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Rampart.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student.
My science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
Hi, my name is Julian Dan. I'm 29, and I'm talking with Margaret today. We are friends and colleagues.
I'm Margaret Rudolph. My Inupiat name is Unimak. I just turned 40. We're in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm with Julian Dan. And yes, we are friends, colleagues, have a lot of intersections of research and research interests.
So, Margaret, why did you start working in the Arctic?
So, I grew up in Fairbanks and in Anchorage, and I'm in Inupiat. My family originally comes from King Island. I always wanted to be a scientist, and I really wanted to help people with large problems, complex large problems. And then I ended up in engineering because I thought that would be that type of work when you actually became a scientist. Turns out engineers don't do that.
What in your childhood reminded you of what value did you see in scientists as you're getting into this?
My dad always kind of pushed me that way a little bit. We'd always watch nature on Sunday. He'd always be that advocate of just you can do whatever. You can be a scientist. You could be a race car driver. But it was always kind of that way. And then he's an academic. He only has his master's, but it's in philosophy. And then he worked, as I was growing up, for the university at the community college. And so I think it was always that way. But I think kind of that's one part of the thing. And the other part is that you're required to take Arctic engineering at UAF. And that's kind of when I started to understand permafrost and how much it was around me. And then it kind of went off from there.
That's interesting. I didn't know that UAF had that core requirement of taking an engineering permafrost class. I mean, it's ubiquitous in Fairbanks, permafrost, and thinking about it and how the landscape is changing. But as someone who grew up outside of Alaska, that's not something I would have thought.
And not only that, what if I tried talking about permafrost in the lower 48 to the public? They'd be like, what's that? I think now it's very fairly recognized, but not back in the day. But yeah, you have to take Arctic engineering. It's a requirement to get licensure in Alaska.
Yeah, I went to a college in Connecticut in the lower 48. Part of the reason that I went to that school was I wanted to go to a small liberal arts school so that I had the flexibility to take anything, having kind of a general basis in a lot of different things, and especially ones that are related to where you are. It's kind of cool.
I mean, some aspects of academia is being able to do whatever you want and having that creativity and practicality. I don't really think it's necessarily people want you to fit in a certain box and do certain things. And that's kind of where I really struggled with studying permafrost in the engineering context, was it was still very much what's considered post-positivist is the term. The classic scientific methodology, you do theory verification, create a hypothesis and you test it type things. And it's not really applied. And not only that, applied is considered less than applied research, working for an actual solution on things and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it sounds like kind of that foray into engineering really shaped the scientist that you are now in terms of thinking about working with people in different ways, in interdisciplinary ways, transdisciplinary ways, and doing co-production between different knowledges.
Yeah. In a weird way, I look at my academic career and it seems like it's all over the place because I also went into science communication, education outreach type things and then circled back to studying methodology and co-production knowledge, which is what I got my PhD in.
Yeah, with my scientific career, I've definitely always been pursuing the theme of application and looking for what's the next most applied thing I can do and opportunistically moving in that direction. And so I studied astronomy and physics in undergrad and gradually made my way back to Earth. I did some stuff on Mars. I did some stuff in Earth's atmosphere. And then I switched and started doing Arctic research in the last 7 years.
Why did you make that switch?
Yeah, I think growing up as a little kid in Portland, Oregon, a lot of people have these ideas of what Alaska is in the lower 48. I remember that was a fourth grade class project to follow the Iditarod and make like a poster about a state. All of that was Alaska. And so I just, for some reason, was really enamored with the idea of Alaska. Specifically, it was coming from it, like the concept of a place full of nature. Yeah, so I just always had this idea of what Alaska was like and wanted to go. And then eventually I was working at Los Alamos National Lab doing a summer internship focused on what Earth's aurora looked like. I was thinking aurora, I was thinking polar. And then I was like, you know, as a kid, I was always so interested in it. So I just reached out to someone who worked at Los Alamos and worked in Arctic science and was like, hey, I don't have a background in this, but I have these skills. And that's how I got started on working in Alaska. How I picture Alaska has drastically changed from what I was picturing when I was in fourth grade.
In what ways?
Well, I brought in this book just to remind myself. This is Contesting the Arctic, Politics and Imaginaries in the Circumpolar North. And it's just this book that I read my first semester for a class, Geography in the Circumpolar North. And it puts these lenses and just helps categorize them in terms of how people view the Arctic. They view it as the last frontier. They view it as a resource state. They view it as an indigenous homeland. They view it as like a geopolitical battle. They view it in all these different ways that in some respects, whether it's through people's belief in them, it becomes true and all of these things exist at the same time. That's always just kind of helped me envision Alaska and kind of place the work I want to do in those different spheres.
And how's that influenced the research that you did for your PhD and what you want to do in the future?
Yeah, I'm currently a PhD student and my PhD is a combination of a couple of different like hard skill, technical, remote sensing and satellite imagery processing to understand how the environment is changing. And the other side of it is understanding how big science projects work in the Arctic, how they work in the communities that they visit. Because a lot of what I've learned is about the academic history of exploitation in communities in the Arctic and parachute science. And trying to teach myself as much as I can such that when I am in a position in which I am leading a project or I'm part of a project that I have input to make sure that things on the project are done correctly and advanced.
This is the way my academic career has went. It's always been in the Arctic. And so I've always kind of like wondered what it's kind of like in other situations. And I can't really tell how much is different, like a sense of the community and the culture. Because there's definitely like these different levels where you have people that are researchers that keep their head down. And then there's people that really work within the state or within a particular community or region. And they work pretty closely with that. That kind of depends like if you're very sociable. And I think it also depends where you end up going. But also like your support system. Like if you work for an agency, there's that aspect of being a bit more mission driven for certain people. So those are people you talk to. And then there's also this other level within Arctic research, which is the international, like pan-Arctic aspect. And so I end up working more recently in the international sphere.
You know, I am very soon going to be moving back to the lower 48 for I'm not sure how long. You know, I'm going to be moving to a large city where there are so many people who have moved there and who didn't grow up there, don't have necessarily a large attachment to the place that they live other than to their community within the city. That's just something I'm thinking about a lot right now is how do I get that sense of place in somewhere else and how much I would like my work to keep working in the Arctic and keep that tie, but not knowing how to do that from afar.
I've thought about that aspect of moving as well and just the opportunity, more education, more mentorship. But like I go visit places and I'm like, I don't see what I value, both in the sense of like as a researcher, as like a person, but also as like an indigenous person, like visually, I don't see that reflected back at me when I go to other places like that.
In Fairbanks, there's a large sense of camaraderie about like getting through winter and about seeing the seasons change. And there's like, just, yeah, such drastic differences in seasons. And I don't think those things will be quite the same in another place, that connection to the land there.
Alaska Voices is a place for communities to connect through conversation. This podcast was the brainchild of Jesse Young Robertson and Bob Bolton, with support from the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center, who also funded today's episode. The Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center is committed to providing regionally relevant science for Alaska's changing climate. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Schoenberg of Mossy Stone Media. The Alaska Voices team also includes Micah Hahn at the University of Alaska Anchorage, with Leah Ferguson, Mike DeLue, Annika Ord, and Diego Noreña at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. If you're interested in more conversations and information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.